this talk, I will present our work, Jekyll on iOS. iOS is the Apple's operating system for its mobile device like iPhone and iPad. So in this work, we will show you how we implemented an iOS app, which looks benign but is able to carry out a number of malicious tasks as instructed by a remote server, and how we make it pass the app review and publish it on the App Store. We call the app Jekyll. So now I'm going to play a very short video. In the video, you will see our app can automatically and stealthily post a tweet on behalf of the user, but without the user knowledge. So first, we search our app on the App Store. The official name of our app is GTSK News. It's a news client. So we search it in the App Store. OK, here we go. Now we install the app. Before we run our app, let's check my Twitter app's state. At that moment, I have 44 tweets. Now let's run our Jekyll app. It's a news client, nothing special. But let's go back to my Twitter. We need to refresh the Twitter state. Here we go. Now a new tweet testing has been posted by our app. This happened in the background without the user knowledge. So in some special scenarios, actually posting tweets can cause very serious problems. For example, a couple months ago, the Associated Press Twitter account was hacked for some unknown reasons and was used to post a few pieces of fake news. And it significantly affected the stock market. But as you can see, so on the iOS platform, actually attackers don't have to hack into the Twitter account. A Jekyll-like app has been able to post tweets on behalf of the user. Besides posting tweets, our Jekyll app can also do a number of other stuff. For example, it can abuse the camera to take photos and call arbitrary numbers, manipulate the Bluetooth, steal device ID, and is even able to attack the other apps and the iOS kernel. But now, if you go to Apple's retail store and ask Apple guys, so does any iOS malicious app exist? Or can my iPhone or iPad be infected by malicious app? Most likely, you will get the answer like this. If you don't jailbreak your iOS device, you should feel safe and secure that they are virus clean. One main reason is App Store use a very restricted app review process, which can effectively prevent malicious apps. And Apple also refused to cooperate with traditional antivirus companies like Kaspersky, which had a willing to develop an antivirus app for iOS. If we look at the history of iOS, it's true that iOS is pretty secure because only a handful of malicious apps have been discovered. In comparison with other mobile platforms like Android, you can easily find a large number of malicious apps on Android. So in this sense, iOS has got a great success. We were wondering what makes iOS so unique. We compared the iOS security architecture with the Android, and we find besides the standard security mechanisms like DP, ASR, sandboxing, actually, iOS has two unique security designs. The first one is mandatory app review, and the second one is mandatory code signing. Let me explain this a little bit. So suppose you were a third-party app developer. After you finish your app, you have to submit your app to Apple and let Apple review your app. This is a mandatory process. So during this process, Apple will check whether your app is malicious or does your app violate any Apple's requirement, and so on. If your app is able to pass the review, Apple will sign your app and put it on the App Store. After that, other users can search your app and download it through the App Store. So, but note that for all the iOS devices, if you don't jailbreak them, they are only allowed to download apps through the App Store. Because iOS will check the code signature of the app. If the app is not signed by Apple, iOS will refuse to run it. So that's why you have to submit your app to App Store, because you cannot find other place to distribute your app. App Store is the unique app distribution channel and totally under control of Apple. Apple is also very proud of the security design. I copied this paragraph from the iOS security white paper issued last year, in which you can see that Apple claims the combination of code signing as well as other security mechanisms can provide solid protection against malicious apps. And the app review process can further protect users from the risks of malicious apps. Because of the great success of iOS, it's widely believed that code signing and code review mechanisms can check all third-party apps, and so that they can offer a great advantage to prevent malicious apps. So the motivation in our research is to test whether iOS is as secure as people expected, and whether app review and code signing mechanisms can really prevent malicious apps. The short answer is no, because we have implemented our Jekyll app. So next, I'm going to present the design and the implementation of our Jekyll app, and finally conclude my talk. Okay, now let's take a further look at what app review and code signing can do. Apple doesn't open any technical details about how it checks third-party apps. We suppose Apple can use both static and dynamic and even manual analysis methods. So in the best case, although it's almost impossible, but we suppose Apple can check all execution paths of a third-party app and ensure that all the existing execution paths do not contain malicious intents. On the other hand, what code signing can do is it can guarantee the static integrity of the app. Because every time you run the app, the iOS will check the integrity, the code signature of the app. Any modification to the app will break the integrity, and the iOS will refuse to run the modified app. So in other words, code signing can guarantee that the app you are running is the app that was checked by Apple. But it's well known that static integrity of a program doesn't mean dynamic integrity of the program. Dynamic integrity here, I mean the integrity of the control flow of the program. In particular, we know most iOS apps are developed by objects of C language, a superset of C language, which is not a memory-safe language. So that means the control flow of the iOS apps is partially organized by the data in the memory, such as the function pointers, return address on the stack. Consequently, the control flow could be dynamically changed by modifying the critical control flow data. So consequently, we can introduce new execution paths and runtime. So in other words, the control flows of the app you are running can be different from the control flows that have been checked by Apple. Based on this observation, we want to create such a kind of malicious app. The app itself is benign, but it's able to carry out, to dynamically introduce new execution paths to carry out our malicious logic. The great advantage of the new design is app review cannot find the malicious logic at all, because the malicious logic do not exist in the app. They are dynamically generated by the runtime data. And to do this, our basic idea is we want to create a vulnerable app and submit the vulnerable app to Apple. And later, if the app, other users downloaded the app, we can exploit our vulnerabilities and then launch our attack. This figure summarizes the overall workflow. So first, we create a vulnerable app with our deliberately designed vulnerability and other code gadgets. I will explain code gadgets later. And we submit this app to Apple. very likely the app can pass the review because the app doesn't contain any malicious logic. And after other users download our app, we can exploit the vulnerability and rearrange the code gadgets together so to carry out our malicious attack. So by doing this, we can freely invoke private APIs and abuse the existing permissions of the app. So you may be wondering, so besides app review and code signing, actually iOS has a lot of other security mechanisms, like sandbox, DEP, ALSR, how we can bypass them. This table summarizes the related security mechanisms in iOS and the corresponding methods we used to bypass them. So for app review, our idea is we can hide control flow hijacking vulnerabilities, and then by exploiting the vulnerabilities, we can introduce new control flows that cannot be observed by Apple during the app review phase. And in terms of address layout randomization, our idea is we can exploit some information disclosure vulnerabilities which leak the memory layout information to the remote server so that the remote server can infer the memory layout and totally break ASR. And for code signing and DEP, so we cannot inject our own shellcode, but we can take advantage of some advanced exploitation techniques like return-oriented programming and return to libc. So we don't need to inject our new code, just reusing existing code can help us to launch the attack. Finally, in terms of sandboxing, I want to emphasize that we don't try to break the sandbox. This is a very interesting thing. So for Android users, when you download an app, you are able to check what permissions the app owns, right? But for iOS users, do you know how to check what permissions the app has? You don't know where and how to check, right? The reason is Apple uses a very general sandbox policy for almost all third-party apps. As a result, almost all third-party apps, they have the same permissions. So by default, the third-party apps can do this. They can access the network, they can read the address book if you allow that at the first time, and they can use the camera. So our idea is the existing permissions of the third-party apps have powerful enough for us to do some attacks. So in our implementation, we designed two kinds of vulnerabilities, but because the attackers are also the developers of the app, they can freely design their own vulnerabilities. We just show how we do that. So the first kind of vulnerability is the information leakage vulnerability. So they are used to leak the memory layout information to the remote server so that the remote server can infer all the memory layout and break the ASR mechanism. So in our implementation, what we did is we designed a memory overflow vulnerability. So the memory copy function, so the size parameter is controlled by the attacker. The attacker can accurately control how many bytes to read to copy. So instead of only copying the string buffer, actually the memory copy also copied the value of a function pointer and later send the buffer to the server so that based on the value of the function pointer, the remote server can infer the memory layout of the corresponding module so that it can bypass ASR. The second kind of vulnerability is the control flow hijacking vulnerabilities. Again, the attackers can freely design the vulnerability like buffer flow, integer flow, or type of confusion, and so on. In our implementation, we designed the arbitrary memory write vulnerability. So in this function, there's a local array, and later there's an assignment. So both the index and the value to be written to the array are controlled by the attacker. Because the offset from the local variable to the return address and also the offset from the local array to other local variables like some local function pointers are fixed, so the attackers can accurately calculate so how to choose the index I so that it can accurately overwrite the return address and the function pointers with arbitrary values without touching the stack cookies. So after we control, hijack the control flow, we need to do more exploitation work. So in terms of exploitation here, we leverage the advanced technique called return-oriented programming and the return to libc techniques. The advantage of those techniques is we don't need to inject our new shellcode because we cannot. We cannot generate a signature for our new code, and iOS wouldn't run new code. But we just rearrange the existing code to do our attack. We just change some code guardians together to do our attack. Because we don't need to inject new code, we can easily bypass DEP and code signing. Especially in our scenario, the attackers, they are the author of the app. They can freely write their app. So another advantage is we can deploy a number of code gadgets as we need in the app. For example, we even able to do this. We decompose our malicious code into small pieces, code gadgets, and hide them under some invisible branches, which will make the exploitation process much easier. So now I will show you I will explain the showcase how we post a twist on behalf of the user, but without the user knowledge. So in iOS has a set of undocumented APIs called private APIs. Originally, third-party apps are not allowed to use private APIs. In this case, actually, iOS provides some public APIs for third-party apps to compose a Twitter UI on behalf of the user. For example, if you use the public API, the public API will present a UI like this and let the user decide whether you want to post a tweet or cancel it. But in our work, we focus on what will happen if the user clicks the send button. And we implemented a debug script which can log all function invocation sequence after the user clicks the send button. So based on the log information, we find a bunch of undocumented APIs which are the relevant private APIs. So we find actually we don't have to invoke the public APIs to present the Twitter video. We can directly invoke the private APIs, which can directly send the Twitter apt without showing the UI. So that's our basic idea. In our Jekyll app, we hide some indirect call code gadgets. At runtime, we can directly invoke the relevant private APIs to directly send the Twitter apt. So this happened without the user knowledge. So our Jekyll app actually forms a new attack surface on iOS. Not only freely invoking private APIs, our Jekyll app can also attack other apps by abusing the IPC mechanism. Also, because iOS apps are natively running on iOS kernel, on the iOS, the apps can directly talk with iOS kernel and other device drivers. So it's provided a opportunity for our app to directly attack the kernel. In our implementation, we show how we can attack a null pointer dereference bug in the iOS file. So in terms of evaluation, what we did is we really implemented our Jekyll app and submitted to Apple, and finally the app successfully passed the review and get paired in the App Store. We very carefully designed the evaluation. So first, we immediately removed the app after it appeared on the App Store and our device downloaded the app. And we run controlled experiments. That means so all the communication between the client and our server is encrypted, and the client only accepts packages from our server, and our server only deliver the exploits to our own device. And we also have made the full disclosure to Apple. So this is a summary of our attack. So in iOS 5, our Jekyll app is even able to send an email SMS without the user knowledge. Even in the latest official release of iOS 6.1.3, our app is able to, for example, abuse a camera to take photos and steal device ID. And we also recorded the full video for the attack. If you are interested, I can show the video offline. And so we know that Apple will release iOS 7 very soon. We also did some initial, very simple test on iOS 7. So the good news is some attacks don't work on iOS 7, but some still work. For example, our app can still call arbitrary number. And next, I will discuss some potential detection mechanisms and the runtime mitigation mechanisms against the Jekyll app. So initial idea is, so why Apple cannot detect the Jekyll app by detecting your vulnerabilities? Because you need to hide vulnerabilities. The question is, first of all, we know vulnerability detection in general is a very hard problem. And not mention that most existing vulnerability detection methods are designed to detect the unintended program errors. So in our scenario, the developers can deliberately design the vulnerability. Whether the existing detection methods can be used to detect the intended vulnerabilities is an open question. Second, I think from the economic perspective, it's very unlikely for Apple to use the vulnerability detection mechanisms, because that definitely will delay the app review process and make the app developers upset. So the other direction is, because in our current implementation, we hide a number of code gadgets to help the RP exploit. So another idea is maybe we can detect the hide gadgets so that we can find the Jekyll apps. I want to emphasize that hiding gadgets is not a necessary step in our attack, because much previous research has shown that if the program is large enough, the existing code base could provide enough code gadgets to achieve the Turing complete computation. So in that case, we don't need to hide our code gadgets. We just reuse existing code gadgets. That would be enough for us to do our attack. And we also believe that actually Apple can do a lot of runtime mitigations against the Jekyll app. For example, I think Apple can use some fine-grained permission model, the fine-grained sandboxing profile policies to refine what the app can do. But I want to say that actually even with a fine-grained permission model, it cannot totally prevent a Jekyll-like app. For example, the app can still abuse the existing permissions to do something. For example, if you allow the app to read your address book, then you cannot guarantee you cannot prevent the app from leaking your address book out. And we also say, because a critical step in our attack is we want to subvert the control flow. So a natural idea is, I think if Apple would actually use CFI-like mechanism to guarantee the integrity of the control flow, that will limit Jekyll apps. And some researchers have proposed some prototype system like MOCFI, PIS, iOS. I think that would be very helpful to Apple. And we also suggested to use some runtime security mechanisms, monitors, and if Apple can convince the users, the developers, to use some memory-safe language to develop apps, that would be better. So this is, to conclude, we propose a new attack scheme to defeat the app review and code signing mechanisms in Apple, and we show that the two mechanisms cannot prevent malicious apps on App Store. And Jekyll app opened a new attack surface on the iOS device, not only invoking private APIs. Our Jekyll app can also, for example, attack the kernel and other apps. So that's my talk. Any question and comments are welcome. Thank you.
So you said you disclosed the attack to Apple, and what did they say?
They appreciate our work, and that's it.
Okay.
Hi, Shen Yang from Penn State. I see there is an option in settings named privacy, and there are it records applications that use what permissions to interact with the system, and there is a Twitter option inside the privacy and records what applications can use Twitter. So when you do the demo in the previous presentation, do you have your apps enabled in this list?
I didn't check that. I can check it later. Yeah, but I think So during our when we develop our app, we didn't apply for any special permissions. So I think it shouldn't appear in the list.
Okay. Thanks.
Hi, Yoichi Shinoda from some part of Japan, and I have two questions. One is that. I just wanted to make sure the changes to the control flow using this exploit, I mean this attack, is it's volatile, right? Which means it does not persist across the restart of the application.
No.
Okay. All right. The second question is related to the effective, I mean the area of impact of this target. You concentrate on iOS. But as I see the chart that compares the what makes the iOS so different, we can put many of the techniques and strategies that are presented in this symposium or elsewhere to the Android section, right? So this attacking method may void all of or some of the techniques that are presented here or elsewhere. Is that true?
So yeah, Android, I think actually we think the idea can also be used to do software obfuscation. So I think by exploiting the vulnerability and for example, when we do malware analysis, we want to analyze what the malware can do. So we try to achieve very good code coverage. But actually, the malware developers can also create such a malware sample. The malware has a vulnerability. And later, the botnet owner can exploit the vulnerability to do extra stuff. So when we do malware analysis, we won't find the behavior.
Thank you. It's just a comment. It's going to be very interesting how long these applications, you know, have an average lifetime per invocation, because it's going to determine the size of the botnet if you are going to create.
You mean how long we spend on developing the app?
No. The lifetime of the applications that are exploited. That's going to determine the size of the botnet, like effective size of the botnet, if one is, you know, if one's intention is to make a botnet. It's going to be interesting.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, this is Indranil Banerjee from Qualcomm. Do you think some kind of behavior analysis of these applications at runtime would be a good option for mitigating vulnerabilities?
We suggest Apple to develop some runtime security monitor. We believe that some runtime monitor, like what you said, the behavior analysis, will help prevent such attack.
Thanks.
Thank you.